I've read your book, The Day After the Dollar Crashes, and I know your background. You're going to say some things that some people aren't going to like, but I want you to get your views out because you have reasons for what you're going to say. But I want everybody to know you're not the Antichrist. Okay?
No,
you're not the Antichrist.
Definitely not.
You know, you're not tricking us. You know, you're not wheeling us into some situation here. This is your belief, and strangely, it's the belief of a lot of people these days now. It is beginning to change, isn't it?
There's a lot of change going on in the world. We've got a global situation. I mean, this whole book started with comments that I made on CNBC Asia about, I guess they were about 16 months ago. And I came on with Martin Sung, and he's in Singapore. And I've done a number of things with him. And we were long gold at the time, and we were long oil at the time. Mm-hmm. And what I was talking about was, I said, well, here, you know, we're talking about, I was talking about ping pong. And I said, well, what are you doing with your gold position? And I said, well, there's really not a lot to do with our gold position. I mean, we have the position on, we're making money, and now it's just ping pong time, which is in our trading desk, we talk about, you know, when we have trades on, sometimes there's really nothing you can do. Sometimes a good investor, it's better for them to do nothing. It's their stupidness that makes them money, not their intelligence. So that was kind of my thinking with gold at times. I said to him, look, I think we're discussing huge wage disparities, which is what we have in the United States versus, you know, Vietnam, China, that are going to result in some type of a global currency crisis. When the currency crisis unfolds, we're likely going to get an alignment of a global world government. There will likely be a new global currency and a new world order. Yeah. And when I said that, it was kind of like, and he goes, well, tell us more about the currency crisis. And I think when I said it at the time, I suppose I was maybe one of the first people to kind of put all those steps into place. The situation in the United States, in Europe, in Germany, in France, in all these countries, Greece, Spain, Portugal, the rest of it, because we're all kind of in the same boat together. We owe, cumulatively, so much money. It's phenomenal.
It is.
And it's not something that can be paid off. It is unpayable. And particularly in the United States, given the fact that we produce something at, let's say, $30 an hour, but they make an iPhone in China for $1 an hour. And so it used to be in the United States, we would have a new technology would come out. We've got brilliant people in the United States, creative minds, all that stuff. We still have that. But those brilliant minds, they're so smart. They know that they can't necessarily manufacture that thing in the United States.
And sell it profitably.
And sell it profitably. There you go, George. So if they can't do that, they know they have to, because they got to put it on the shelves of Walmart and Costco, whatever else, and be competitive, that they're going to initially manufacture it overseas. That means we don't get those multi-year periods where you get in, like, where we create employment, where you have the arrival of the television, where you have the arrival of the automobile, where you have the arrival of the airplane, where you have the arrival of personal computers. That's gone. That connection is gone. But we still owe the money. But how do we pay it off? We can't pay it off. And so we came to that point around 2000, and I called the 2000 top, and we were predominantly short between 2000 and 2003. And so the dot-com melted, the dot-com bust. And then the government and the got together, and the business leaders, well, we've busted that out, so how can we, quote, reliquify the economy? Right. And so what they did was they tapped into what? The last place where all that wealth was stored up in. And where was it stored up in? The house, people's homes.
That's right.
Where they were accumulating all this equity for their retirement or whatever else. So we totally gutted that out. And what's left? Nothing.
There's nothing left.
Just a country with lots of debt.
It's a house of cards.
The house of cards that came tumbling down in 2008, we injected capital, and we were predominantly short in 2008. We shorted the General Motors and the Lehman and all those things. And so what happens is they reliquefied that, right, by pumping money into the system. And not really. What they did was they shored up the outstanding derivatives with the Fannies and the Freddies. Basically, they fed a losing trade. That leverage is still on. It still exists.
It does. It hasn't gone away.
No, it's still out there. Yeah. They can't feed it off because the amount of money that would be required is crazy, and the banks were running at leverage of like 100 to 1. So it's a very precarious situation. The economy is reliquified to some extent. Stock market's doing fantastic. But the employment picture still lags. And the employment picture doesn't just lag here. It also lags in Europe.
And foreclosures are still out of sight.
Foreclosures are still out. Well, people are – well, I mean, the housing industry needs to readjust itself, and so do the expectations of the sellers. Those things need to come in alignment, but the government doesn't really want the real estate to go down. But it can't – but governments can't keep markets from following their own course. And it would be healthy in all likelihood for the real estate market to come down, for there to be an equilibrium of buyers and sellers and rational pricing. Rational pricing is what brings markets into order. The fact that we don't have rational pricing, these disparities, the disparities in wages, the disparities in cost of production between the United States and emerging Asia, is, imagine it like a fault line, like this giant fault. And we know what happens if these tensions build up along these fault lines, but inevitably they rip, and they rip violently.
Yes.
They don't rip a little bit. You have an earthquake. You have something like 8.2, 9.
It's not a pressure cooker with a little steam coming up. The whole thing blows up.
Exactly, and that markets begin to follow their own course. And I believe we're starting to see it. I believe we're starting to see what we're seeing in the Middle East with the uprisings on the street. You know, we said, idle hands. You know, you've got all these people that are coming out of college now, George, not just in the Middle East and Egypt, but also here in the United States. Our sons and daughters are leaving school with degrees and all of those things and have studied very hard, would be deserving of jobs and employment, but there's no employment for them.
That's right. And what about the soldiers coming back from Afghanistan, back from Iraq? Where are they going to go to work?
Well, our government has seemed able to keep them pretty busy year by year.
Yeah, exactly. Turn them into lifers.
I'd love to see them come home, you know. And so, this thing of, me being pro New World Order. Look, I think I'm aware that some type of an order, a new order, will likely have to come into being, and I feel it is coming into being.
Well, by the time you're off tonight, I want you to be able to tell us why you believe it's good for us.
Because I can only give my opinion.